The seriousness of a violation depends on the specific standard alleged: fraud, gross negligence, or negligence. Fraud is defined to cover a voluntary and intentional act or omissions done to deceive the government. Gross negligence is a severe degree of negligence involving reckless disregard, and negligence is defined to include a failure to exercise reasonable care. A false statement or omission, however, must be material. In other words, it can't be just a picayune small point that was wrong. It has to be something that's material, which means that it affected or could have affected CPB's decision to allow entry, appraise merchandise, and assess and collect duties.
Global companies face unprecedented risks and challenges in today's economy. To mitigate these legal and economic risks, companies are rapidly embracing and elevating the importance of robust ethics and compliance programs to promote positive corporate citizenship. On Corruption, Crime, and Compliance, you'll hear from industry leaders and insiders about how to create effective ethics and compliance programs that will mitigate risks and maximize financial performance. Here's your host, Michael Volkoff.
Welcome. Michael Volkoff here for another episode of Corruption, Crime, and Compliance. Hope everybody's doing well. We got an interesting discussion today about import enforcement and the Customs and Border Patrol. And the Trump administration is committed, obviously, to a redefined objective of what fair trade constitutes. And this will have a significant impact on all businesses across all operational functions. And this is not surprising. For years, the United States has pushed global trade as an objective unto itself, but the Trump administration is raising important questions concerning the benefits to U.S. consumers and workers. As part of this new international trade framework, the Trump administration has identified the Customs and Border Patrol as a critical player in the enforcement of U.S. trade laws. CPB has a broad mandate to ensure compliance with trade laws, detect and prevent violations, and protect national security. In this respect, CPB can impose regulatory penalties for violations, seize goods, and take legal actions against individuals and companies. In serious cases, CPB will refer investigations for civil or criminal prosecution. On top of these trade enforcement obligations, CPB plays a critical role in prosecuting and enforcing forced labor and intellectual property rights. Now, we're going to review how CPB operates more in the regulatory context, not so much as in the referrals for criminal or the referrals for a civil prosecution. But this is just to build from, let's say, the ground up with the regulatory approaches that CPB uses. These are going to be important as time goes on here. CPB, for example, maintains an e-allegations program under which individuals and companies can report allegations of trade violations. Under the Enforce and Protect Act, EAPA, CPB's authority was expanded to include investigation and enforcement against importers who evade or circumvent anti-dumping or countervailing duties. And that's important because there's been a lot of enforcement actions with regard to that. And CPB relies on a variety of investigative sources to initiate investigations, including increased bonding, enhanced targeting, and inspection of high-risk imports. The CPB invites parties with information about an ongoing investigation or ongoing contact to contact a party to the investigation to add information to the administrative record. Alternatively, a person may file a separate EAPA allegation if the regulatory requirements for standing are satisfied, or a party may file an e-allegation to provide information directly to CPB. New EAPA and e-allegations have to be filed through CPB's online portal. Now, the CPB website includes a list of EAPA investigations and determinations. These enforcement actions include a number of products, such as food products, metal lockers, woven ribbons, thermal paper, glycine, and many other products subject to anti-dumping and countervailing duties. The CPB enforcement actions include notice of initiation of an investigation and interim measures, which usually follows with notices of determinations for evasion. In the end, CPB identifies and outlines steps taken by violators to circumvent these duties by transshipment involving other countries. So that's just one area that is important, and it's a new area because of the Enforce and Protect Act, which was passed. But let's go back to more of what I would call CPB's traditional authorities. Section 1592 of the Tariff Act of 1930, which goes back to the specific code 19 U.S.C. Section 1592. The CPB's general enforcement authority springs from Section 1952 of the Tariff Act, and CPB relies on this provision to ensure compliance with the Harmonized Tariff Schedule of the United States, HTS-US, for classification, which is one whole risk area, valuation, another risk area, and other import regulations. Specifically, Section 1592 governs civil penalties for false statements, omissions, and other misconduct in relation to the importation of goods into the United States. So Section 1592 prohibits any person by fraud, gross negligence, or negligence from entering, introducing, or attempting to enter or introduce merchandise in U.S. commerce by means of any material and false document, statement, act, electronic data, or omissions. The provision applies to importers and any other person who aids or abets or causes a violation. So you're going to notice a lot of common terms here with OFAC, for example, and traditional law enforcement terms that are typically used here. The seriousness of a violation depends on the specific standard alleged: fraud, gross negligence, or negligence. Fraud is defined to cover a voluntary and intentional act or omissions done to deceive the government. Gross negligence is a severe degree of negligence involving reckless disregard, and negligence is defined to include a failure to exercise reasonable care. A false statement or omission, however, must be material. In other words, it can't be just a picayune small point that was wrong. It has to be something that's material, which means that it affected or could have affected CPB's decision to allow entry, appraise merchandise, and assess and collect duties. Like other government enforcement programs, individuals and companies can earn significant benefits from a voluntary disclosure. That's in the regulations at 19 CFR, section 162.74. CPB does not have to show that the U.S. suffered a loss in order to impose penalties. Administrative penalties can be mitigated during administrative proceedings based on various factors, including voluntary disclosures or corrective actions or mitigation. These are traditional concepts that we're all familiar with. A simple example of an administrative enforcement action is the following. An importer declares the value of its imports as $100,000 when the correct value is $500,000. The lawful duty is 10% or $50,000. If CPB finds fraud, the penalty could reach the full domestic value of up to $500,000. If gross negligence, the penalty could be up to four times the penalty due, or $200,000. Or if negligence, then the penalty would be up to two times the required or the duty due, or $100,000. So you can see the difference. Fraud would carry $500,000, gross negligence $200,000 maximum, and negligence $100,000. So let's talk about the administrative enforcement process. In the program, CPB's program is robust, increasing, especially with the importance of trade and tariff enforcement. And we're going to see more actions here because of tariff enforcement. There are a lot of ins and outs to this administrative process, which can make it appear overly complex, but really, step by step, it can be, you know, you can follow this pretty easily because it's set out in the regulations pretty clearly. For example, case initiation. CPB initiates investigations from a variety of sources, including routine audits, cargo examinations, e-allegations that may come in, as I mentioned before, and referrals. The import process, for obvious reasons, includes a significant amount of documentation and data, which establishes potential issues linked to false statements, omissions, mistakes, and other miscues. Now, first, after an investigation is initiated, there's a pre-penalty notice. For example, if CPB identifies a possible violation, CPB will issue a pre-penalty notice which outlines the alleged facts and legal basis for a violation and the apparent level of culpability, that is fraud, gross negligence, and negligence, and a proposed penalty amount. The importer then has 30 days to respond and submit evidence. After reviewing the matter, CPB then decides whether to issue a formal penalty notice and to cancel, reduce, or otherwise modify the proposed penalty. If issued, a penalty notice will seek payment of a specified amount. Now, there also may be an administrative appeal and a petition for mitigation or cancellation. The importer can file a petition for relief or administrative appeal within 60 days after the penalty notice. After review, and this is done, the appeal is done within CPB by a higher level person. After reviewing, the CPB can reduce, cancel, or mitigate the fine based on various possible issues, including cooperation with the investigation, prior violations history, voluntary disclosure, and remedial measures implemented. If dissatisfied, the importer can then seek further administrative review at the CPB headquarters. And once all appeals have been exhausted, CPB can bring an enforcement action for payment of the penalty in the U.S. Court of International Trade, 19 U.S.C. Section 1592E. Now, let's look at some of the relevant considerations. If an importer discovers a violation prior to the CPB, the importer has a significant incentive to voluntarily disclose the violation, since the CPB will award substantial credit for such disclosures. Given the continuing need for a strong relationship with CPB as a regulatory agency and to the importer's continuing business, importers should favor disclosure in these circumstances in order to protect its relationship and reputation with CPB. Import violations have a 5-year statute of limitations from the time the violation is discovered. Remember, discovered. This time limit can then be extended in cases of intentional fraud when the failure to identify the potential violation is partly or entirely the result of fraud. The discovery of a violation is triggered by CPB knowledge of the facts that constitute a violation. The limitation applies to administrative penalties and civil actions in the Court of International Trade as well. Now, aside from the penalty process, CPB can seize any illegal shipment and seize merchandise. CPB's authority and procedures for doing so derive from, again, the Tariff Act of 1930. Merchandise introduced contrary to law is cited at 19 U.S.C. Section 1595A, parentheses C. Now, CPB has regulatory authority to detain suspicious merchandise for up to 30 days. And that's under 19 CFR section 151.16. During this period, CPB will investigate whether the goods violate any U.S. law. In other words, are they counterfeit, smuggled, mislabeled, or otherwise prohibited? If a violation is confirmed, CPB will issue a notice of seizure that sets forth the legal basis for the seizure and a description of the seized goods. The specific procedure for the administrative forfeiture will apply to seizures of goods valued at less than $500,000. If this threshold is not reached, the importer can file a petition for return or penalty reduction based on mitigation. This petition must be filed within 30 days of seizure. If the importer files a claim and posts a cost bond, CPB refers the matter to the U.S. Attorney's Office for initiation of judicial forfeiture cases. So that's just a quick overview of what we see from the CPB. There are other areas we're going to do another podcast on forced labor, for example, and what they do in those circumstances. And we'll be continuing to talk about these issues in the trade compliance area, given the administration's hyper-focus on this issue and the upcoming beginning, I think, of trade compliance enforcement matters. So this is a very hot topic, and I think we should continue to sort of focus on it. And companies need to focus on what goods are being imported and what in their supply chain, and they need to start looking at overall supply chain activities for business management and cost management purposes. And we're going to talk about that in another episode as well. Thanks, everybody, and we'll see you next week for another episode.
If you enjoyed this episode, the best way to support the show is by subscribing on your favorite listening platform. To learn more and connect with Michael Volkoff, go to volkovlaw.com.